I'm Greg Masiello, and if everybody can hear me, I'm not going to stand in front of the podium. I think we're okay with that. And I'll walk around. I'll walk through some slides today. Some of them will go pretty quickly, and then the intent is at the end, we'll address any questions that you guys may or may not have. But I will say that although I'll stand up and do the majority of the briefing, Ms. Jean Chamberlain from the Boeing Company is here, as well as Vern Bennett and Rich Linhart from Bell, and also have asked Colonel Chris Mongo Seymour here, who's the commanding officer of MAG 26 for the Marines, and led the contingent of aircraft that are out here supporting Riot last week and Farnborough. And quite frankly, he's probably the most experienced in terms of flight hours B-22 pilot we have in either service. And, although I am a Marine, I'm a Joint Program Manager, so I'll address some of the AFSOC usage, the Air Force for the aircraft as well as the Marine Corps, and I'll speak to future capabilities, in some cases, foreign military sales, where we're going, as well as basically an overview of the entire program. And because I know there are many familiar faces in here, as well as several that I don't know, I'll try. Some of these slides will go quick, but if you have questions, just let me know. First off, wanted to identify what is our program of record. People, so we know that we're in a fiscally austere time, the budgets. There has been no change whatsoever from the Osprey program of record. 360 B-22s for the United States Marine Corps, 50 for AFSOC operated. They operate the aircraft, U.S. SOCOM overall, and 48 are in our acquisition program of record for the U.S. Navy, although the budget is not yet, we don't have the dollars in our budget line item. But I'll speak to some there and where we go, and I will tell you I'm as positive as ever on the Navy flying B-22s for logistics support base and some other options, which we'll talk about here in a minute. So I'd be remiss if I also didn't speak about our industry partners at Bell Boeing, currently a strategic alliance, and quite frankly, they've been teamed together on this aircraft since 1982. The program's been around a while. I'll talk when we deployed the aircraft, but for everything basically from the tip all the way back through the empennage and the tail, that's Boeing in blue. And from the edge of the prop rotor basically through the edge of the prop rotor is Bell Helicopter. And if you haven't had the opportunity to visit their facilities, I'm sure they would say this, but I would encourage you, if you go to Ridley Park or Philadelphia for Boeing, you'll see the first use of robotic technology in aviation, I mean, similar to what you might see on an automobile line, but laying up composites, doing drilling, really some advanced capabilities that are making this more efficient and more affordable each and every day as we go. In Bell, I really tell you, if you want to see a state-of-the-art assembly facility, you need to come out to Amarillo, where, quite frankly, you get all of the parts and pieces that are coming through Boeing shipped down there, as well as different centers of excellence from Bell and Fort Worth that get shipped out to Amarillo. And we marry that up with our Rolls-Royce engines, which are produced in Indianapolis. And I would encourage you, I think they would too, if you haven't had the opportunity to come out and see the great one. These are all recent and relevant photographs. This was just recently in Afghanistan, aircraft out there in operations. But where do we stand today? We have multiple squadrons, and I'll show you a picture, a graphic of kind of our globally deployed fleet and where we're going to go in a minute. But 12 Marine Corps and 2 AFSOC squadrons that are operational and deployable in different stages of the transition. We're about halfway through the Marine Corps transition as well as the AFSOC transition and standing up squadrons, and I'll show you the locations in a minute. We have 178 aircraft fielded today, and there's a breakdown on the slides between the MVs operated by the Marines and the CVs operated by the Air Force. We have executed our fifth of a five-year procurement side of a five-year multi-year, but I'll show you later where we are in deliveries about midway through that first multi-year. And we have a proposal in from Bell Boeing to the government on our second multi-year, and I'll show you the slides and the times on there. That's for an additional 98 aircraft. We're tracking to a contract award. We've gone through all the negotiations. We were certified via the Department of Defense over to Congress on 1 March of this year to continue to pursue that. And I will say we have favorable language for both the House and the Senate right now, tracking towards a multi-year. And from everything we're looking, we've got support all the way around the board. And quite frankly, we'll get through negotiating and sign that contract just as soon as we can. And we're working with basically the entire supply base in bringing in. And it's quite a large effort, and we're looking forward to that. Additionally, we're in the last minutes here of the PBL, Performance-Based Logistics Contract, with Bell Boeing. And quite frankly, we have a multitude of support contracts. Other PBLs, essentially, we have one with Rolls-Royce on the engines. Through the NAFSA, they will supply. We have multiple ones for tires and radios. But this is our first supply support one across the whole contract, and that's why it's in. And globally, the entire V-22 fleet is approaching and soon to pass 150,000 flight hours. And as we have said in the past, and as we continue to increase aircraft at about 3 to 4 aircraft a month, we bring in, whether MVs and CVs, out to the fleet. That's an exponential growth as it continues to go. So what is the aircraft? For those of you that aren't familiar, this is an airplane. And it's versatile. It should be thought of as an airplane, but it has all the capabilities of landing and operating like a helicopter. And this aircraft has performance than, you know, if you think of it that way, at any speed. Not just speed performance up to 282 knots, but even at 0 knots in a hover. This is our most survivable aircraft that we have out there. It's safe. It performs extremely well as a rotorcraft in helicopter mode, as well as an airplane, and is tactically employed in all of those evolutions. Now, range. So speeds get you so far and so fast. Fuel's required. Both our MVs and our CVs are aerial refuelable, and I'll give you an example of recently what we did as a proof of concept and how far we can go. But quite frankly, we have numerous examples. There's not a picture in this slide, but certainly we can speak to it. We just flew the 4 V-22s that are here supporting Rhea and Farnborough from North Carolina, which is a relatively long distance away from here. It's also designed for shipboard. Marines application, both the MV and the CV are able to fold like this, and these are the aircraft fold essentially in the same footprint of what a CH-46 would be. So we can kind of rack and stack multiple aircraft in there when they're not folded out to fly. And as far as our capabilities on aircraft, you can land multiple aircraft. We can now get off of an entire load of Marines faster than we ever could have with a traditional rotorcraft. And then obviously with that range, speed, we can take them to the target area, whichever it is, better than we ever could. But these pictures that are going up behind me are, we're expanding the capability on multiple ships. This isn't an inclusive picture, but in some cases, these are ships of our allies or different types of ships. This is the USS Bush. We recently qualified the V-22 on our aircraft carriers, the large deck carriers. We'll be operating on the USS Truman here in 2 weeks. And last week, we actually performed a carrier onboard delivery mission of the USS Lincoln out in theater. So the aircraft is being operationally used on all these. These aren't just demonstration and test flights. What's not shown on there is our ability to land on a lot of the small decks, the THAEs, or support ships, that we have. We actually have photos and all those things, but it's a myriad of ships and opportunities, and we continue to expand the envelope through our test program and looking out at the different winds so that we can continue to use the aircraft off basically any ship or platform. Somebody asked me earlier, whether or not the B-22 is capable for oil platforms far out at sea. Certainly it is. If it's able to land on the smaller ships, it would be capable of that. Internally, the B-22 can carry 24 combat-loaded troops in the crash-worthy troop seats, up to 20,000 pounds internally, up to 15,000 pounds externally with the dual hoist, and it's also able with one hoist. And all of those numbers depend on the ambience and the aviation of how you would outfit and cube and what degrees. Extremely capable. Essentially, this aircraft was designed for combat, which is so we know that the triply redundant systems and the robust survivability aspects, the oral signature of the aircraft, all lend great credibility to what this aircraft has done. And quite frankly, and I'll show you in a minute what the Marines have done since 2007, deploying this aircraft in Absarom, pretty much. But what people don't necessarily remember is we're probably equally suited, although it wasn't designed for humanitarian. This happens to be a photo in 2010 of the Haiti relief mission. The aircraft were also used in Pakistan, as well as Honduras, in several relief efforts. And what was unique about a B-22 is the same thing that's unique in every other role. You don't need to go to a runway. So in a situation like we had in Haiti, where there essentially was only one runway, and it wasn't in optimal conditions, if you will, and we had a lot of fixed-wing aircraft, this aircraft could operate off the ship, fly back, in this case, to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and around the multiple islands and go straight to the LZs that were inaccessible by other aircraft. Certainly, in some cases, helicopters might be able to get into the LZ, but they probably can't go as far to pick up the supplies and equipment. And we've seen that in the Navy as well, that they have onboard carrier delivery with fixed wing, and then they have to transfer everything over to a helicopter to bring it in, not necessarily with a B-22. So globally deployed fleet, and all of the items that you see here in the United States, essentially the six Marine Corps squadrons there are stood up on the East Coast, the Absarom squadron in Hurlburt, the Marines in at Miramar are in the transition, our six squadrons, as well as our Absarom guys in New Mexico. But shortly, you'll see that we'll expand our basing and operations globally. In 2012, we have aircraft en route to operate in Japan. In 2013, they'll be operating in support of our VIP, the Presidential Helicopter Squadron, in HMX-1, and the aircraft will operate on the Greenside support role, as well as stand up operational capabilities here in the UK at Milton Hall. And then by 2015, we'll also have squadrons out there operationally deployed in Hawaii. And then what's not shown on here are our multiple shipboard deployments. We've had five shipboard deployments, and basically everywhere where there's not land, they can deploy. So what are the Marines doing with this aircraft? This isn't obviously an inclusive list, but they've been continuously deployed since 2007. Three deployments over 18 months in OEF. They're on their fifth rotation in OEF, IFEF, and then our fifth deployment in Lemieux. And we continue to expand the capabilities and, quite frankly, I think, transform the way people think and operate. Not just how we operate the B-22, but how combatant commanders and different people, whether it's logistics or assault support, are able to prosecute. These statistics here on the next two slides are basically some numbers with respect to recent experience in OEF. There certainly are more than that. But the takeaway I think you should have are the Marines are operating the V-22 throughout the full spectrum of what it was designed. I do get questions, are we babying the aircraft? Do we treat it differently? And that's absolutely not the case. The aircraft is flying, whether it's in harm's way or humanitarian missions, that's what gives us great confidence, not across its safety record, but also its survivability. We do know that different things have been shot at the V-22. In some cases, the V-22 has sustained damage, but in no case have we lost a V-22 to any enemy fire. And one of the things that, quite frankly, from the program we've learned is just how well we can repair and put these things back into service immediately there in the combat environment. Now, it's not just the Marines that are out there operating. It's the AFSOC guys. And quite frankly, Marines, we tend to stand up and we'll tell you exactly what we're doing with the aircraft. The nature of the AFSOC operations are we don't tend to brief too much about what they're doing. But rest assured that since they have been continuously deployed, and these stats are just their most current deployment from May of 2011, and then just for the numbers, they're cut off in March of 2012, but they are there now. They've been continuously forward deployed in their area of operations, and as we articulate, they're deployed on their national mission task force. And quite frankly, a lot of the different things that you you may see in the news and different things could be attributed to CV-22s. They're not exclusively, I would say, V-22s in general are out there doing an awful lot, and they aren't necessarily given the credit, if you will, for what they're doing behind the scenes. I will tell you, the people that need to know exactly what V-22s are doing on behalf of not just our nation, but our coalition partners. So what we're learning across the board, not just from the program or from the operators, is there are new ways, new missions that were unachievable with legacy aircraft. We can go further and we can do different operations. This is a slide, it's very busy. I'll apologize for that, but it was a proof of concept that we recently did. We flew from Cannon, New Mexico, a V-22, off the east coast of the United States, over 1,200 nautical miles, and basically performed a simulated medevac from a nuclear submarine at sea. It's a situation, you know, submarines don't typically have a place for aircraft to land on board, but with a V-22, you were able to go out, hover that long range, and in this case, lower, and I'll show you a picture in a minute, and simulate, we put a stretcher on a Stokes litter and brought it up and then flew all the way home. They did execute aerial refueling, but you know, just for some perspective, 500 nautical miles, essentially a radius. With unrefueled, you could go out basically to 1,000 nautical miles, and then with internal tanks, aerial refueling, different things like that, it doesn't stop at 1,200 nautical miles. Quite frankly, you continue drawing those out. The V-22 is able to take three internal fuel tanks. It's also able to do multiple air-to-air refueling, so it continues. In this case, relatively long trip, 2,600 nautical miles round trip, over 11 hours of flight time, you know, direct to the submarine, 5.5 hours. These guys flew, they didn't land. You know, V-22 out there operating, there is the ability to cycle a crew in and out of the aircraft, much like you might see with some other fixed wing. But really, this was a demonstration of kind of the unique reach and operation.
What was this, sir?
When was this? June 6th. So basically a month plus 3 days ago. So perspective on that. This is a shot of the V-22 in a hover over there, and in you know, a moment, I'm not going to show you the progression of photos, but we do have them. Lowers the litter down on the hoist. They take it, they put on board, the hoist goes back up. This aircraft flies, you know, over 1,200 nautical miles back home to New Mexico. All of that range within 15 seconds of its planned overhead time, you know, given the location, everything, the V-22, you know, the sub, you know, appears as submarines do. V-22 appears like it does overhead, lowers the hoist, whether in this case it's a proof of concept for a medevac, could have been some critical supply or whatever else it might be, happens to be a submarine, it could have been anything else. But quite frankly, so from the commanding officer of the sub, and basically what this says is all the aircraft's been proven its worth out to different combatant commanders and now to strategic STRATCOM, enabling, you know, basically in their words, some capability that it didn't have before. And precedence, just so you know for perspective, we lost a sailor several years ago because he was injured on board the submarine and no ability to get the guy off there to medical care. A second time, different time, we actually diverted an aircraft carrier out there to the submarine, so you have ship steaming one way, boat steaming the other way until a helicopter could get off and take care of that. We, you know, kind of became alerted to this. said, we can do this with a B-22. And there were a lot of questions. B-22, there's no way it could hover over a submarine. It can, B-22 hovers. It wouldn't matter whether it was a submarine, open air, oil platform, ship, landing zone. So anyway, that's the origin of it. Perspective here in Farnborough, if I took those exact same range rings and showed where we were today in Farnborough, and then the 500 nautical miles radius of a B-22, 1,000 nautical miles, or in the case that we just showed, just over 1,200 nautical miles, that's the perspective of what that same proof of concept you could do right here from the UK. And quite frankly, whether it was pursuit of a fixed-wing search and rescue or some other area, some other country, we could apply the exact same criteria. And those circles, quite frankly, continue. You could do this without air refueling with internal tanks, what we have depicted here, or you could keep drawing those lines out further. And I don't have contained in here. I know the last brief we gave, I know I briefed it in Dubai as well as at the Paris Air Show. We redeployed a flight of six B-22s from Afghanistan all the way back into the Mediterranean, flying well over 3,000 nautical miles, crossing three continents and 10 countries, basically in just over 20 flight hours, I believe. I don't remember the exact number. So this is just an example of that reach that you can do with the B-22. Now, we get questions on relative affordability. You can perform missions that we couldn't do before with fewer assets. And as an example, I will tell you, AFSOC replaced over 100 aircraft of various type model series, fixed wing and rotary wing, with 50 B-22s. They were able to rebalance, if you will, their portfolio of aircraft. And recently, our Deputy Commandant for Aviation, the quote basically says, the success of the B-22 in combat has really prepared it for the success that we're looking in this equally demanding arena, which is the battle of the budget. And we know that we're moving into an era of fiscal austerity, and we have extreme confidence in this platform based upon its operational successes that we remain confident, as I briefed you, on our program record in the future. Questions on efficiencies and affordability. Numerous studies, over 20 as it says here, that go through showing that relative to traditional rotorcraft, how the B-22 can be more cost-effective and operationally effective, quite frankly, with fewer aircraft. And we have proven that over and over again. Now, maybe this shouldn't say future applications because, quite frankly, it, up here we see the carrier onboard delivery. As I mentioned earlier, just this past week we performed that mission on the USS Lincoln. Vertical onboard delivery, the V-22, as I showed you a picture of the very first slide, is external loads, and we have plenty from our ongoing views of taking an aircraft engine for a different type model series over to another ship. As far as aerial and ground refueling, we execute the ground refueling today from a V-22 to other vehicles, and our industry partners are working right now modifying basically this external kit and doing a proof of concept with their tech demo aircraft they have in the plans, basically putting a nozzle that the B-22 would also act as an aerial refueler, a giver, if you will, as well as I pointed out, we can take fuel either to our own aircraft or to others that are aerial refueling. We perform casualty evacuations today. This concept is actually drawn up from some of the Air Force potential surgeon kind of operations that you could do with this type of aircraft that's not possible in a traditional rotorcraft. And it performs a series of casualty and rescue. And there are different units and different services that have dedicated medevacs and rescue aircraft that this could be applied to. And then furthermore, in the ISR arena, this graphic shows, a unit that's currently deployed here in Sea Kings in the UK as a demonstration. We're doing some ISR capabilities in our current view using our onboard systems and sensors going back to the ships, but expanding that role into additional ones depending on what a future customer may need. So what else do we get requests from a potential FMS countries? Interest in assault and special operations, which we talked about we did. Interested in search and rescue. This is actually a pretty good demonstration of how the hoist works. Off of the ramp, the aircraft is extremely stable and allowed to bring multiple people, or you can picture that litter going up right through the aft end of the aircraft. Also, it's suitable for executive and VIP transport. I mentioned how it's going to HMX-1 and supporting our VIP squadron. It has essentially become a platform of choice, not just in areas of Afghanistan, but quite frankly, we have operated this, whether it's out of the Pentagon pad to the Wall Street pad, so in an urban environment, more commercial. This B-22, because of its speed and range and the ability to get to small places, is being used today. And so certainly, others are asking us whether it would be applicable, and it is. So what are we doing from the, from the program side and from the government with these expansion initiatives? There are a series of bullets, both international and domestic, that will come up. We have, in some cases, hosted international forces, trained and allowed. They have flown on the aircraft, did some demonstrations. We've participated in air shows. It's not an inclusive list, but in 2011, in Canada and Toronto, we also went to the Canadian National Defense Day, flew numerous people. We leased an aircraft, and in combination with Bell Boeing, took an aircraft in Dubai for the first time. Obviously, we were at Farnborough in 2006. We're back here today. We had an outstanding outing this past week in Riyadh, flying. I won't name everybody that we flew, but I will tell you that they were numerous, and they were relatively high-ranking officials. The air chiefs out there flying, and the feedback was quite positive. There and a lot of questions and I guess it's best for me to say a lot of military to military, government to government communications on the B-22. In some cases, actually exchange of not just verbal query, but we are working with multiple nations officially with paperwork going back and forth. And as I pointed, not an inclusive list. We expect to continue places like Avalon and Singapore in the future. Domestically, I talked about how we are expanding with our own carriers and other fleet assets. The C2 replacement, there's an analysis of alternatives that's going through its various stages of staffing inside the Pentagon for the U.S. Navy, their aerial resupply and logistics sea basing, ARLSB, which you could read as their carrier onboard replacement aircraft program. It's been signed off initially, and it's going through the different approval processes. So until it's finally signed off, I'd be remiss to comment. We contributed information to the study, but what I can tell you with confidence is the B-22 fared extremely well and remains an alternative there, and quite frankly is cost competitive by the multiple billions of dollars, by my own assessment, over any other thing that would replace that aircraft. So certainly something that we ought to consider. Not just probably as a C2 replacement, but that expanded capability. The numerous operational demos, I gave you just an example of the submarines. There have been others. And quite frankly, many people who, although the V-22 has been around for a number of years, people probably don't appreciate that all V-22s out there might be aerial refuelable. They can all do these types of missions in different, whether it's airdrops, parachuting, air ops, all these types of things. So quite frankly, our program continues to grow. And why can we do that now? Why is FMS viable for us? Our area for expansion is right now, this is a delivery profile from Bell Boeing to the U.S. government. We're basically right here on the red line, middle in the first multi-year of the five multi-years of taking aircraft in and negotiating the second multi-year. But quite frankly, the adjustment in our profile from the U.S. government has allowed the available capacity. So the opportunity is today where we didn't have, although the chart looks similar on both sides, that this was a bell curve, so to speak, we didn't have the available capacity that we have today. And there are production benefits and operation and support. support benefits to expanding that business base, both to the U.S. government and other customers as well. So this is my last slide, and if you know the bottom line, people are asking, can we export the B-22? It is exportable. It's out there operating today. It's already ready, affordable, effective, and survivable. And I'll stop there. I could continue going, but I suspect one or two of you may have some questions. I'll give an opportunity, Mongo, if you want to stand up and say anything about bringing the B-22s over before we open up to questions.
Sure. We came over from North Carolina, as Matt said. We departed last Friday morning, the 29th, and we arrived here on the 1st. A rather unremarkable flight this time compared to the last time we came over. Three legs through Canada, and then the Azores and Lodges, and then direct here, cumulatively about 15 flight hours. Refueling, we did have a C-130 for refueling option if we needed it. As it turned out, we didn't need much fuel because we had a great tailwind. And it was a good flight.
And I would tell you, and we'll answer questions that you guys have, but in the corral down here is a B-22. It's staffed, manned by Marines from his operational units, BMM-264, one of his squadrons down there. And they're some of the best ambassadors for the program and the platform that we could possibly have. And if you have detailed questions, those guys will give you detailed answers. So with that, we'll open the questions.
Tom Clark, that's incredible. There's been a lot of discussion in Japanese press about whether the Osprey is, in fact, safe or not for the deployment to Okinawa. What are your latest numbers for accidents per mile and injuries?
Okay, I will tell you, this aircraft is safe. There's no question in our minds. That's not marketing. That is proven statistics. I'll have to get you the statistics relative from the safety center, so I won't quote you something that's incorrect. But this aircraft, since if we look back, and we do answer questions on the early history of the program, this aircraft was redesigned basically as a result of the early lessons learned. The B-22s that are flying today are not the same aircraft that we had initially. We have different improvements, redesigned hydraulics, electrical wiring, multiple things in there that what we have deployed today is safe out there to fly. Now, with respect to numbers, we can get you all the details on that, but it is one of the safest for the Marine Corps, as the example I think you're asking. This is one of the safest aircraft that we have, and we'll go. I won't give you program numbers. We'll give you the safety center numbers.
On the Navy expansion potential, how does your cargo capability on this airplane compare to what the C-2 has today? And as they evaluate that, would you need to modify a potential Navy version to match what a C-2 can do?
Okay, so for those of you that didn't hear, the question, you get, tell me if I got it right, was asking relative to what the Navy uses in their COD platform, the C-2, what it can carry, and payload-wise, what the B-22 can do in reference to that. I'll give you rough numbers, but shortly I can give you the exact numbers because we have some expertise with us. But recently, on the last evolution that we did on the USS Bush, we took the opportunity to fly the B-22 fully loaded, look through its short takeoff and landing, and we proved out that the B-22, 5,700 pounds, if we can carry a payload greater than the C-2 by 5,700 pounds. Did I get that number right?
Yeah, 57K was the max takeoff weight, and it's well over 4,000 and change, more capable cargo-wise than the C-2.
Okay, so 57K max takeoff weight in that environment for the B-22, and it was well over 4,000 pounds of cargo capability that exceeded what the C-2 can do. And certainly, I'm biased, B-22 program manager. The C-2 has served the U.S. Navy extremely well for a number of years, very capable platform. But that number of years is long. And there are, it's required to use a catapult to go off and the resting gear to land, the V-22 is not. That gives us an advantage over a platform like that, quite frankly. They have to reconfigure internally and put up a series of walls to, I'll say my words, stiffen and stabilize that cargo. The V-22, you don't have to do that. You can come in and land on multiple spots. It could do a running landing, rolling landing. We're expanding that capability, and we intend to do, I'll say, an operational demo, although, as I pointed out, we've already done on-site missions out there operational, not program-driven, but fleet-requested. But we'll still do an operational demo, whether it's myth-busting or whatever else, and expand that capability. But the C2, I'm sure, has its advantages in some regimes. The V-22 multi-mission capability, I believe, opens up a whole perspective of sea basin support. And the feedback we get from our current use, quite frankly, some of the people that are fondest about the V-22 are the supply officers aboard these ships. And we have seen data where, whether it's equipment needed for the aviation elements or for the ship themselves, they can now expand and reach out. They're thinking in hundreds of miles as opposed to tens of miles. You know, aircraft that were only limited to rotorcraft fought in tens of miles previously. But if you picture, say, the Mediterranean, a V-22 position and land has the full reach, basically, of all those ships out there.
So of those Navy aircraft that were on your slide about the program of record, do they look like an MQ-22 or C-22? Do they have different sensors or other
devices? The question was relative to configuration. The Navy aircraft in the program record, are they more like what the Air Force are using or more like what the Marines are using? The answer is more like what the Marines are using. We'll do some opportunities. We'll look at perhaps installing fuel tanks for longer range. There's an option for a longer range version. There's a few differences between the Air Force variant and the Marine variant, and we could probably tweak it, but the bottom line is it looks more like the MV than it does the CV. The difference between those are largely in the avionics. Next question. Yes, sir.
Brendan Lloyd, the editor of the Parity Demo for Equus and Spectre. I write about women in aviation. Recently, we had a film on the Spitfire women, the 170 American and British women who ferry planes during World War II. How many women pilots are there in the Osprey?
You know, relative, I'm not giving you an exact figure, but there's probably about a dozen, women pilots out there in the V-22 community.
After how many?
About 300.
Yes. Can you give an update on the potential to this aircraft to become the next presidential?
Okay, so I believe your question was, what's the potential for the V-22 to become the next presidential aircraft? Is that your question?
Yeah.
What we are doing with the V-22 today in the presidential support squadron is we'll deploy V-22s. They'll be shiny green in the support role. As we operate 53s today and previously, or 46s today, and previously we had 53s and 46s. So initially, the V-22 and the current plan is it will it'll fly in that green side support role. Then it would fly all of the other supporting people in and around that mission and not specifically designed or intended in its current role as a presidential transport. But as I already pointed out, in theater and not a presidential role, this has been the aircraft of choice to fly VFPs for. In the country, the same thing occurs. And we have flown, Senator Obama, as well as other candidates in the V-22. So you may see pictures from time to time of now President Obama getting off of V-22. He hasn't flown in that role as the president. We restrict that to the White House. But I'm biased. Do I think there's a future opportunity or role? I do as a V-22. Program and what the capabilities are, but that's not our initial plan.
Yes, ma'am.
What altitude? think that picture was roughly about 150 feet.
Is that the rest of you
go? No, that's not
the rest of you go.
The V-22 can hover at inches, you know, as it's coming out to land. So it's variable. You know, the hoist is quite capable. So.
Has that picture been released to the
media? You know what? I think you can find that picture if you go to the subgroup or the USS Wyoming homepage, which is where we did.
Facebook.
Yes, sir.
I'm kind of thinking Kringle with Flight Day News. Can you say a bit of on the FMS point of view on how long do you think before we see a contract or a DSA request for some actual export sales of V-22? It's 6 years since you were here last time, and hopefully not another 6 years before you come back.
I'll agree with that. So your question is relative timeline to when we think we might have our first international sale or paperwork. We already have official paperwork being exchanged via the channel. Navy IPO for us, Navy run acquisition program for all of our time policy series, up through DSCA, over to international potential customers going back and forth. We are targeting, I believe, some of my industry partners have written in their goals and objectives to have a contract within 2013. I wouldn't discourage them of it being sooner, but you know, we're realistic. It takes time to put these things in place, but we're in discussions with more than one official party from multiple countries today.
So that would be after we sign the next MYD.
It depends on how quickly we get that negotiated. But yes, right now that's what the timing would lend itself. But we are also, within the multi-year, discussing the opportunities for what we would call VIQ, or variations in quantity, or you can think of it as option aircraft. Initially, we went out for 122 aircraft, and we have currently our program is going to require 98 aircraft in that multi-year. So there's probably some inherent capability, speaking from the government program side, but getting head nods from the industry. Yes,
sir. I'm under director right now. What are the objections or what are the stumbling blocks to some of the aircraft that's not going to be the cost of the profit? Do you say that what you're doing in terms of what you're doing the operation and expanding the envelope is a way of increasingly attractiveness on a multi-mission basis to those potential international customers, rather than just saying it's a trivial domain to be in or whatever. So, giving that rounded edge that maybe, say, an international customer might buy something at the airport, maybe, therefore increasing their numbers to bring down the cost.
Okay, so your question was relative to cost. And what international customers may have thought as a barrier to entry, this kind of thing, and whether new opportunities like this. I'll tell you, that's not why we did that proof of concept, for FMS. But as we continue to use the V-22, we continue to expand the way we use the V-22. It has the benefit, I believe, that you just identified. So our direct purpose may not be for targeting a specific FMS customer. Hey, look what we could do. You could do the same thing. But, you know, quite frankly, if you were country X and you had, whether it was a search and rescue, oil platforms, any of those other missions, you could draw those same range rates and see that capability. And yes, we do have questions from different customers of, could you do something like, and, you know, whatever their like is, we could say, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, we demonstrated by doing X, and that's pretty similar. So I believe that you're right. It's a combination of, you know, cost, affordability. That's a relative thing to relative customers. It's a combination of production as well as operation and support costs and then capabilities and the new ways that you can use an aircraft like this. And I have had several officials from other countries say they could rebalance their portfolio of aircraft. Not necessarily eliminate all helicopters or eliminate all fixed-wing aircraft, but they could probably rebalance their force and quite frankly, they could rebalance some of their basing opportunities. So when countries and customers look at different ways at affordability, and they look at everything that this aircraft can be, I believe we have different models that can show them how affordable the aircraft is.
I compared to repacking between, say, an ISR duty to a C-star duty, all of those aircraft have to be delivered sort of specially equipped for that mission.
So your follow-up question is, are these aircraft multi-mission, and they can do that through mission kits, these are my words, not yours, or are they single-purpose aircraft? They are mission kits. The way we use it today, and I'll give you an example. The trap mission that was well advertised, Marines flew into Libya, picked up the downed F-15 pilot. That was an aircraft that was out flying in a logistics support role around multiple aircraft capable ships in the Mediterranean when that event occurred. Came back to its ship, landed, fuel, quick reaction, Marines on board the aircraft, launched as a flight of two and went in. It was not specially equipped for that. These other missions, it depends on how you modify the aircraft, some of our weapon systems and other, the Medevacs, those are mission kits. Any V-22 today could do any of these types of things. And now, certainly if somebody designed an aircraft for a specific mission, I suspect they could do that. And my industry friends would help them do that. But right now, it's very versatile, and I suspect that's the way it would be.
Yes, sir. My name is David. Yes. I'd like to ask you about the schedule of deployment of NAVA. Is there going to be any delay, or is it going to be deployed in time compared to the original?
Okay, so your question was relative to the schedule for deployments of the V-22s in Okinawa and that process. I think probably what's most appropriate for me to say is it's our intent to continue to go as processed. The aircraft will go, and we are having direct conversations with the Japanese government and the U.S. government. And we're extremely confident that as we walk through the information and data on with respect to the aircraft, that there will not be a delay. But obviously that's slightly above my pay grade. But from everything that I know, we are continuing. But we're doing it closely in concert with in that case the host nation of Japan.
Is this going to be deployed in October?
I expect it to be. Yes, sir.
What's your feeling about the general perception of the V-22 now? Because any radical aircraft that has a difficult development, it takes an awfully long time to build confidence up within your own community and then outside. And what's your perception of how well that process is going?
Okay, so I think you're asking me for what's my perception of the perception of V-22.
Yes.
That's a common question that, quite frankly, I ask on a lot of the one-on-one interviews with some media. At the end, I'll say, what's your perception of the program? You're now researching it. And from that, it really is remarkable. This is a piece of disruptive technology, changing the way people think. It's not, although it's revolutionary in what it can do, it's out there today, it's real, it's reliable, it's affordable, it's effective, all the words are on the bottom of that slide, and people know that. It's no longer a PowerPoint slide, but the aircraft you can go out and touch and feel, and the people are flying in them. Because of the way that we're deploying them with our Marines and with AFSOC internationally, they're getting an awful lot of exposure from a lot of countries flying in the aircraft. There's confidence in the V-22. I'm sure there will always be some skeptics that exist. It's unfounded, my opinion, because of the track record we now have on it. So I can tell you the program is healthy, extremely well. We should be confident in the product that the industry is delivering to the government and out there being operated. And so this may sound syrupy or whatever, but I've got four kids. Mongo's got a few more than that. This would be the aircraft that I think either one of us, in all sincerity, that's the aircraft that I would fly my family around in. And I think everybody, you know, that perception is now well known and quite confident. So even by the tone and tenor of questions that I get asked, the tide has changed. And in essence, you know, I mean, it sounds maybe it's like a cliche, but, you know, we're flying the future aircraft today. You know, the future is now kind of thing. Tilt rotors that people wondered whether we would ever get there, we're there and we're beyond it.
I think we have time for one more quick question.
Is there any possibility in the long term that it might also be the replacement for the Falcon? And are there any live options out there at the moment for the
So, your question, any possibility of expansion role, in this case you're talking the E2 Hawkeye role? So the answer would be yes, because you said any possibility of that. Now, it depends. We're not currently in the discussion of doing that, but quite frankly, for a lot of nations, and then we are in discussions here, that wouldn't have the capability and the requirement for a catapult. And look at what the ISR and the forward-looking one, like the graphic showed, you could, off a smaller ship, use and expand your horizon and ISR awareness off of a platform like the B-22. So I certainly think there are possibilities in that kind of usage, although we're not currently in discussions with the U.S. Navy and using the B-22 as a Hawkeye replacement.
Thank you all very much for coming today.
Thank you.